Hi there. This is a quick message that this podcast is general financial advice only, meaning it is not specific to you, your needs, goals, or objectives. We suggest you don't act on this information until you've spoken to your professional financial advisor. You'll find our full disclaimer, link to our financial services guide, and website in the show notes below.
Hello and welcome to the Investment Journey podcast. My name is Taylor Bree Casey and I'm the communications manager here at Munro Partners. Following the COP28, which concluded in Dubai last week, we are sitting down with Mike Harute, our responsible investment manager, to find out, did it actually achieve anything? Mike, welcome back to the Investment Journey podcast. It's great to have you again.
Great to be here, Taylor.
So we're going to be talking about COP28. So last year we sat down and spoke about COP27. Can you remind myself or any of our listeners what COP28 is and why it's so important?
Sure. So COP28, so the COP stands for Conference of Parties. And what it is the annual conference for governments essentially to talk about how to tackle climate change and implement the goals of the Paris Agreement essentially. So if we remember the Paris Agreement of 2015, effectively, I like to think that there were two goals, which is one, keeping global warming to well below 2 degrees, and two, getting to net zero by 2050. And so the COP process essentially now is the annual big meeting between governments, but also others like investors and companies, et cetera, to talk about how that is actually achieved.
And so it wrapped up last week and it was held in Dubai. What were some of the outcomes and what were some of the highlights of the conference? I heard a 12-year-old storm the stage.
Yes. Well, I've actually been to conferences myself where people have stormed the stage and it's unsurprising. And I must say that I personally feel a lot of that emotion that would drive somebody to do that. So it's good to see the younger generations embracing their power in a way. So it's actually nice to see.
And they're passionate about the issue.
Absolutely. And I think that as time goes on, that passion clearly will hopefully stay with them. And as they get older into more positions of power, we'll see even more and more ambition on climate change. But back to, the outcomes, I think there were many outcomes, but probably four that I would focus on all around addressing the how of achieving those two goals, which I mentioned. And I think all of them incrementally positive. So the first was around an ambition by over 120 countries to triple renewables by 2030, the 3x renewables by 2030.
Wow.
The second is around nuclear energy, so tripling nuclear energy generation by 2050. The third, which is interesting and hopefully we'll touch on it later, is around energy efficiency, doubling the rate of energy efficiency gains per annum. And the fourth one, which I think has captured most of the headlines, is around transitioning away from fossil fuels and what the COP agreed around fossil fuels specifically.
And so I just want to circle back on one of those things that you mentioned. So you spoke about 3x the target for renewable energy by 2030. How is Munro targeting investments here and what are the barriers for achieving this?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you know, and hopefully some of our listeners know, we have four sub-themes within the Munro Climate Change Leaders Fund and our strategy. One of those is clean energy. And it is one of the key areas and one of the highest areas of exposure within our funds. And so we're targeting it, I think, in a few ways. So probably the most obvious is around solar and wind. Solar in particular has been difficult because of increasing interest rates and the effect of that on how projects like solar projects are financed. So that has been a challenge, but we have found, we think, good stocks in some of the components to solar panels and also some of the larger developers like NextEra, which remain within our fund. Wind has been probably even more challenging to some degree than solar. But the area that I would like to really focus on and highlight is really what I think is probably the key impediment to actually achieving the 3x goal that was agreed by, as I said, over 120 countries, which is the actual grid. So it's one thing to develop a solar farm, it's one thing to develop a wind farm, but to actually connect that to the grid is a big challenge. And I think in many countries, including the US and throughout European countries and in the EU, it's that interconnection and that connection to the grid which is proving to be a challenge and where some of the bottlenecks are. So really, I think some of the investments that we're most excited about are the companies that help solve for that. So one of those is Quanta in the US, which builds the transition and distribution grids often across states in the US. Another one is NKT, which builds the high voltage transmission, including a subsea transmission.
Cool.
That is involved. Yeah, it's amazing. I'd love to actually see what these things actually look like. But, you know, connecting France and England by a big thick cable underground, underwater and underground. Those are some of the companies which we think, you know, are really kind of key to actually achieving some of these ambitions.
Something really interesting, I think, about the climate portfolios is always these really ingenious companies that come to light, and you guys get to learn a lot about them.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And but at the same time, yeah, clearly some of the solar names, there is a lot of still technology development happening here. So the company that I mentioned earlier was, you know, Nextracker, and what they do is they help make solar panels more efficient by essentially moving them in line with the sun throughout the day, so that the solar panels actually are more efficient at capturing the sun's energy. But some of these other companies like Quanta that I mentioned, yes, there is a technology element to that, but to some degree it's rebuilding and continuing to build out something which has existed for a long time, which is the electricity grid, under this new scenario where we need a lot more electricity and a much more complex electricity system to support more renewables, electric vehicles, et cetera.
So not technically a renewable, but it is carbon-free. People might be surprised to hear that nuclear was such a focus at COP28. Why is nuclear so important?
Yeah, so in terms of nuclear, I guess we probably would think of it as your carbon-free electricity generation. So when you look at the life cycle emissions of different fuels, no surprise, coal is at the worst. And actually nuclear, together with renewables, are the lowest forms of electricity generation. Why I think nuclear is becoming more important is that I think people are realizing that as you decarbonize through adding more renewables into the mix, it does cause a challenge in terms of intermittency. So you can't generate electricity when the sun is not shining or the wind is not blowing. So you need that baseload power. And some countries, in particular the US, are increasingly realizing how lucky they are because they have a fleet of nuclear energy generation that's been around for decades and decades that provides baseload carbon-free power. So what we did see at COP, as you said, was a goal to triple nuclear generation by 2050. So that doesn't just mean continuing, obviously, and making more efficient the nuclear power stations that exist today, but also adding new generation capacity as well. So we currently have exposure to the nuclear theme through Constellation Energy, and they are the largest owner of the nuclear fleet in the US. Interestingly, we have seen that company become more and more able to monetize, I suppose, that unique asset. So they are working with companies like Microsoft, where they're providing them that carbon-free electricity to power their data centers and things like that. One thing I'll just sort of tag as well that, you know, and we've previously talked about is obviously when people mention nuclear, and, you know, we think about this quite carefully, is some of the broader ESG issues around nuclear. So nuclear safety, nuclear waste, and the ability to use nuclear fuel essentially for weapons. That is something that we've spoken to Constellation Energy about. It's part of our ESG score, and I would recommend people go and listen to one of our earlier podcasts where we talked about that topic as well.
Yes, for anyone who's interested, it's called A Nuclear Topic, so make sure you go back and have a listen to that one. Finally, you mentioned the goals around accelerating energy efficiency improvements. How do we do this?
Yeah, so I think energy efficiency is one of these areas which is often sometimes forgotten about, I think. But, you know, there's one way to reduce the reliance on fossil fuels, which is to use less energy and to get more of an output using the same amount of energy. And I think it's really important to not forget what was agreed at the COP around doubling the rate at which that occurs at a at a national level and clearly therefore then at a global level. I think for us, there's probably two elements of that that we focus on. One is the energy efficiency of buildings. So buildings are responsible for something like 30 to 40% of global greenhouse gas emissions, both through the construction but also through the use of buildings. So if we can get more efficient insulation, which companies like Kingspan, which is in our portfolio, provide, or we can have more energy efficient heating and ventilation, HVAC, which is companies like JCI or Johnson Controls, you can actually make a really big improvement in terms of the overall greenhouse gas emissions. And it's something that really any company that has an office can aspire to do, and it's something that we do internally. We're Climate Active certified at the moment. And you know, that is something which has very clear economic benefits as well. You know, you see it in your power bill, you see it in your energy bill.
That is for both new buildings and retrofitting old buildings as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you asked that, because I think a lot of the opportunity for these companies does come from that retrofit as well, because clearly new buildings are more cyclical. So obviously currently in various economies there are, you know, we're not exactly in a cyclical upturn when it comes to both the commercial and parts of the residential building cycle. And so for a lot of these companies, they do actually use that opportunity in a way to pivot to that retrofit opportunity where they can really quite clearly make the case that through investing in better insulation, for example, you can save money.
So to sum up, are you excited about this space for 2024?
Yes, I'm absolutely excited. I think when you reflect on the last year or two in the climate change space, I think one of the key drivers for why these stocks have, some of these stocks at least, have not performed so well, particularly in the clean energy space and in the EV space, is around interest rates. So increasing interest rates does make, you know, the economics of buying an electric vehicle more challenging. It does make the economics of building a solar farm more challenging. So I think those are some of the key drivers for why these stocks have not, some of these stocks at least, have not performed as well as many would have hoped. What I think is encouraging despite all of that is that the underlying ambition around climate change has actually increased in the last 2 years. So 2 years ago, we didn't have some of these goals that we talked about today. We didn't have a tripling of renewable energy by 2030. We didn't have tripling of nuclear by 2050. We didn't have goals around energy efficiency. And then reflecting back on the big one last year, which is the Inflation Reduction Act, we didn't have the Inflation Reduction Act. So I think we're actually seeing more ambition, more commitment around climate change, both in the governments and the national level action that we've seen, but also when we talk to corporates as well. You know, they're increasing their ambition, they're going harder most of the time. And so I think for those reasons, I'm actually more excited about this opportunity than I think, you know, we could even say maybe 2 years ago, despite some of these headwinds.
A lot of tailwinds converging.
Absolutely. As we talked about, our big three tailwinds converging. That's right.
Well, Mike, thank you for taking the time to recap another COP conference with us on Invest in the Journey podcast.
My pleasure, Taylor. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you'd like to learn more about the Climate Change Leader Strategy or to listen to any of the episodes mentioned in this conversation, head to our website at www.munropartners.com.au.